Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, before we get started today, we need to introduce you to a company that we are loving right now. The company is called Sensory Thera Play Box, and it's a sensory toy subscription box that ships out the first week of each month.
Yes, and you guys, each box is curated by a pediatric occupational therapist, and the items inside are designed to provide sensory input and help children with self-regulation and anxiety management. So we talked them into giving us a 25% discount off of your first box, and we are going to share that with you guys, our wonderful podcast listeners. So stay tuned for more information.
Okay, let's get into the episode.
Hey guys, welcome to the Sensory Project Show. This is Rachel and Jessica, if you're new here.
And today is kind of cool because we are talking to Brian, who happens to be Rachel's brother.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a really good conversation for you to listen in because Brian has a very unique story. Maybe not unique, but kind of unique. I don't know. It feels unique, yeah. But I'm sure, as we mentioned in the podcast, we don't talk about this topic very often, so maybe it's not as unique as we think.
Yes.
I think we should just jump right in.
Okay. Ooh, okay. So you guys don't know what you're about to hear.
All right.
Enjoy.
Here we go.
All right. Welcome, Brian, to the podcast.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
First of all, let's talk about who Brian is really quick. Or are we going to wait till later?
No, let's get the cat out of the bag.
So Brian is Rachel's brother.
My older brother.
Yep.
I am the big brother.
So there's a little bit of a bias during this podcast episode, but it's going to be fine.
It'll be just fine.
It will. No, we're really excited to have my brother here. He has a unique story to share with everyone, and it's a different perspective, and I think that having the sibling perspective is unique, and I don't know, I'm excited to share. I'm gonna call it our story because I know it's mostly your story, but I was impacted by the situation, so it's our story.
Yeah, absolutely. We're both present.
Okay.
But first, we have 5 secret questions so that everyone can learn your deepest, darkest secrets. The first one is, what is your favorite way to drink coffee?
In a cup. I preferably like to use a mug.
I warned you. Okay, but not literally. Not literally. What is your favorite way to drink coffee?
Coffee Americano.
So just plain? Black.
Black coffee, yeah. Normal coffee is fine for me.
Simple.
It's a job.
In a cup.
Simple.
Okay. In a cup.
In a cup.
All right.
How many times have you gotten that response?
Never.
Mm-mm. Nope, that's the first. Okay, what would you rather eat? A dog bone or a little can of wet cat food?
Dog bone.
Why?
If you have not opened a can of cat food, it smells horrible.
But
I would rather eat a dog bone.
But if you open a box of dog bones, it doesn't smell that great either.
It's manageable. It's like flour, pretty much.
Okay.
I could handle the taste of a dog bone from that smell versus the can of cat food from that smell.
Okay.
Put it that way.
That's okay. Fair.
A little olfactory input going right on here.
Okay. What is your go-to stress reliever?
Music. 100%, without a doubt. Music is my way out when I'm stressed.
I would agree with that.
What kind of music?
I'm kind of a jack of all trades. If I have to literally calm my brain, I prefer non-vocal music. Classical or something that doesn't have a lot of lyrics.
If you could live anywhere, no matter the cost, where would it be?
Oh, boy. On top of some mountain somewhere.
But like, what mountain? You have to be specific.
Okay, well, I'd say the Cascades right now, because I'm in Washington State, so the Cascades is by far the best we got over here. Maybe a view of Mount Rainier, that'd be awesome.
But I mean, anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world, the Alps. Okay. The Alps, if I want to get more specific.
Okay.
A little plot of land over by the Alps.
It's beautiful over there, that's true.
Yeah.
It really is.
Okay, last question is, what's your sensory quirk?
So if I'm not wearing any shoes, I will walk on my toes. I have to have, it's odd. I'll say it because I don't want to walk on my pants or whatever, but if I'm not wearing shoes, I'll walk on my toes.
Now, do you know that that's a sensory quirk only because your sister is Rachel?
She's told me about that. She made me aware of it.
Okay.
But I get called out all the time for doing it. Okay. So right. I think that's the biggest thing I have.
Okay. That's fair.
Okay. So now that everyone knows all of your secrets, tell us, you know, who you are and a little bit about the story that we are going to share today.
So if you've already prefaced, I am your brother, Brian. I live up here in Spokane, Washington. I'm an outdoor enthusiast. I work for an auto insurance company doing medical claims. And we're going to be talking about my history with a seizure disorder.
Okay, so growing up with a seizure disorder, how old were you when you started having seizures?
So I'm going to say I was about 11, 10 or 11. It was sixth grade in elementary school. So I believe I would have been 11 at the time.
You were 11.
My math is horrible. And I'm pretty sure I calculated right up to it. I was 11.
I think that's right. I was in second or third grade, I think, when it started happening.
Third grade. Because I was in,
Okay.
And so, like, everything leading up to this, you would say, was like quote unquote normal, typical childhood, nothing out of the ordinary.
Right, absolutely. I had no idea. And then one day, it happened.
Okay, let's talk about that first day.
So I think most of mine occurred in the early morning, I want to say. I don't really know what happens before. I mean, all I can say is there's an odd sensation that, you know, something is off, and then the next thing you're waking up. So it was a morning.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about, like, the first seizure, like the experience that you went through, what it was like, type of seizure.
So it was an unconscious seizure, from what it sounds like, because this is only from the perspective of dad. I must have gotten up, and when I stood up, I fell to the floor. He heard a crash downstairs, just a thud, and I must have been laying there for enough time that I could have a red mark on the side of my face, and I had obviously been drooling, so I had all this drool on the side of my face, a red mark from lying there, and somehow I managed to walk upstairs, and from the story I've heard, I was dazed. I was out of it. He couldn't get me to explain anything. I couldn't describe what happened. I just kind of stood there out of it. So really, after is just an odd sensation. It's almost like waking up out of anesthesia.
Mm-hmm. And so this happened. Did this happen every day?
No. So it happened once, and then I think a couple of days later we might have gone into the doctor's office. Or actually, it might have been a couple of days later. Went to the doctor or pediatrician and mentioned what happened. No one really knew what was going on, so we had a couple checks, and over the course of this, there was only four in the span, I want to say.
Four seizures.
Four seizures, right, mm-hmm. Over maybe 3 or 4 years. So we had no idea when it was going to happen, no idea what was causing it, but after that first one, I know they were on the phone at the doctor's office to get me in there to see what was going on.
And did they do specific tests?
Yeah, so one test, they had me come in, pretty much try to sleep underneath a light, a strobe light, I guess. And they had the strobe light flashing to see if I was sensitive to the lights. A lot of folks with epilepsy are sensitive to lights. I don't believe if I had any reaction from that. I did have, I think it's an EEG, the brain scan done, where all the little diodes go in your head. Again, they had me sleep with that, and that one did have brain activity showing that I did have a seizure while I was sleeping. So potentially I could be awake and have a seizure, or I could be asleep and having a seizure. Both of those were proved.
Well, and what's interesting about that is so often we hear about children having seizures when they're sleeping and families not knowing mm-hmm. that they're having seizures. So I think that's a really great point that you brought up, that they were actually able to see the seizure activity while you were sleeping. And, I mean, you were having grand mal seizures in the daytime as well. You know, few and far between, but the crazy thing about seizures is they look different for everyone mm-hmm. and
absolutely
they can be silent or they can be
huge,
crazy. I mean,
yeah.
I remember, I'm going to share this one because it's not a typical seizure, but I remember waking up and you had something that you were swinging around your head, and in our house there was like, you could run a circle around our house on the inside, and you were yelling, fire, 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 like there was an emergency. And I'm freaking out. I'm, you know, a kid, and it's like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And then we finally figured out that it was a seizure. And I don't think we knew it at the moment. We thought that you were just kind of being silly and weird.
Just being goofy.
Yeah, yeah. Which is not out of the norm, right?
Right, right.
And it was another one of those situations where our dad like tried to stop you and you had that dazed look in your eyes. And he was like, oh my goodness, he's having a seizure. And you would always throw up after you had seizures. And you did that time, but I think it's so interesting that they look like a fall on the floor. They look like nothing. They look like you're
mm-hmm. they look silly. Like they look like you can be just like lost in space. Mm-hmm. You know, there's seizures where kids are just looking off into space and they can't hear you and you think they're just not listening, but they're actually having a seizure.
That's the scary thing too, because you don't even know. You could be, you know, face to face with someone and they could be, you know, days in a way, and here they could potentially be having a seizure. Mm-hmm. Now that would have been the second one I had. So the first one, I don't know, you know, because typically you'll think of the seizing that will happen on mm-hmm. the floor, convulsing. And that was the second one I had, and that was the only one where I was technically conscious, but not really
present
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I had just looked up before hopping on here, it might be called a complex partial seizure. Mm-hmm. So you can be awake but not there completely.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only one where I was actually awake of all four. The other two were unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, of course, having some while you're sleeping, probably more than anybody knows, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Because I know that test happened a little later on throughout the course of it happening. And I think that really kind of was a mind-opening experience for the family. I remember my dad was with us at the time, but he told me he was, you know, I was asleep and the doctor was watching a little chart that has all the brain activity going along. And the doctor said, "You see that there? That was a seizure." Mm-hmm. So when he told me that was kind of that's kind of eye-opening because it's terrifying. You don't know if you're awake or not.
Well, and these are in your, like, preteen and teenage years, right?
Yep, yep.
So that kind of, does that make you feel like you're different from your peers? How did that affect school and friends and relationships?
I mean, honestly, as a kid, you're not really thinking about the long term, I think, as much as parents are. So at the time, I was doing track, doing sprints, and I think I was more worried about not being able to do track. You know, I can't speak for the parents, But I know that's probably something more that the parents, you know, are worrying about. But at the time, I hadn't even thought of that, to be honest with you. I was more worried about, oh, will I be able to run? I did end up, there was, on my third occasion, I did have a friend that was present when it actually happened. And I had fallen on the floor. And I think it was, you know, saw it as me just being goofy, because obviously I was a goofy kid. So I think it may have just been, oh, Brian fell on the floor, he's being goofy. And I'm pretty sure parents probably explained to him what happened, but at the time, that was the only time I had a friend present that experienced it.
Didn't he, like, step over you or something?
he stepped over.
You guys were, like, hanging out, and Brian fell on the floor. He, like, stepped over you and, like, continued to do whatever it was you were doing.
Yeah, great friend there.
Oh, gosh.
Well, we never talked about it again. I think, you know, it's just made Brian has a seizure disorder.
I think, you know, we don't know how to talk about it. It's not something that is talked about.
I think it's a tough conversation to have because you don't know how it really. Some folks have, you know, epilepsy where they can't go a day without it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was blessed that I wasn't in that situation, and so that can really, you know, truly affect your life going forward. I don't think it would be something that could affect relationships or education. I don't know. But for me, it didn't, not at all.
You didn't feel nervous like you were going to have a seizure in school or in front of people or anything like that?
It was certainly on the back of my mind, because we didn't know when it, you know, what was causing it or when it would happen. So it was certainly on the back of my mind, but I didn't let it hold me back. Just, you're going to school every day. You don't know when it's going to happen. There's nothing you can really do. It's better not to be worried about it. Just move forward.
Well, and then so going from that point of, like, what causes it, was there any tests that they ran at the doctor's office that would tell you, like, what was causing it? You said they put you under a strobe light to see if that would cause a seizure, but...
We had a very optimistic doctor that I think really helped. He suggested that it may be just a, you know, I was young, my brain was still developing. So it might be potentially something that I could grow out of. It wasn't necessarily dialed down to be epilepsy, but more just a seizure disorder at the time. So that helped, but it wasn't really nailed. This is what you have other than just a seizure disorder.
Yeah, and I think that a good point to chat about would be like some of the sensory things that came along with the treatment plan. So they put you on medication, mm-hmm. and that was the route that they went to, quote unquote, like healing or curing.
To like prevent the seizures.
Right.
Yes, yes. And yep. So you weren't to a point in your life where you could swallow pills. And and the pills that was all that they had was just pills that you could swallow. And so I remember the countless nights, mornings, I don't remember when it was, but what mom and dad would have to do is open the capsules, put it in some sort of, you know, applesauce, pudding, tapioca, something like that, and then you would have to eat it. And I can't tell you how many times I remember you just so mad, so frustrated, gagging, like you could not get this texture down. It was like a nightmare.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I have to say for the record, I would use just maybe a quarter, like literally the size of a quarter of oatmeal. So I would use a tiny little amount of oatmeal and sprinkle, you know, break open the capsule and sprinkle the medication on it and get that down, struggle to get that down, or a little spoonful of applesauce or pudding at night. And it was horrible. It was horrible.
Yeah, and the other day you told me...
That was a big challenge.
The other day you told me about how you were, like, planning ahead. Like, if we went to grandma's house, tell me what you were saying about how you would, like, plan ahead where you would have to take your meds and stuff.
Yeah, so I was so into the habit of using oatmeal in the morning or applesauce and pudding at night, that if I didn't have that, I would kind of freak out. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. So I remember having little baggies of oatmeal. You know, if we were going to grandma's, it would be, you know, for the weekends, we'd have little baggies of that, like a container of pudding, because I could have it in a container of pudding that could last 3 days. So I don't eat a lot of it. Yeah, being so down to the pattern, I have to have the, you know, that method. I'm so used to it, I have to have that. But I noticed, I told you the other day that oatmeal, I couldn't stand it, but now every day in my adult life, every single morning, I eat oatmeal for breakfast, a full bowl of oatmeal. So I don't know what happened, but now oatmeal is my go-to breakfast.
But can you do applesauce and pudding?
I can do applesauce. I haven't had applesauce in a while, but I think I can do that. Chocolate pudding, I just don't like chocolate pudding.
Oh. Chocolate?
I love chocolate pudding.
I know.
I could go for some right now.
Yes.
I wasn't a fan of chocolate pudding.
Okay.
I don't know why we didn't switch over, but that, I think that was something that camouflage the flavor of the, mm-hmm. the medication mm-hmm. the best.
So can I talk about the fact that they didn't know what was causing your seizures, but they still put you on a medication for it? And how does that look? Like, what is your thought on that?
So they put, I don't know if I can say the type of the medication. It was called Depakote. And I know from what I've seen on it, just anticonvulsant. It's also out for migraines too. So that was recommended, and then I was on that every day for years. I mean, to me, I didn't know any other way. I don't know. I can't speak for my parents, but I just did it because, you know, I want to get through it. I want to get through every day.
Mm-hmm. From my perspective, you know, that was, what, 20 years ago?
It's been a while.
Google was not, was like just barely coming out. Like,
nope.
Research wasn't out there for parents, like easily accessible, mm-hmm. like it is now. And I'm speaking for my parents, but I'm like, they don't know any different.
Nope.
You know,
the doctors, well, and they trust their doctors.
Yeah. The doctors say, let's put meds. But, you know, if it were me now, I'd be like, hold on a second. Let's look at all of
the whole picture.
Exactly.
Very different nowadays. And so that's just so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good point. And I think it comes with the trust that parents can have with doctors.
Mm-hmm. Finding a good doctor.
Finding a good doctor, having someone that you can trust. And you mentioned it, and it is a whole different world from then to now. But I think that might have been a, you know, a good route to go if someone has had a seizure.
So I have two questions. The first question was, you said that the medication was also recommended for migraines. So did you have migraines? And then my second question is, are you still on that medication?
So I'll start with the second part of that question. I'm not on the medication. It ended just prior to my freshman year of high school. So from 6th to just about 9th grade, we'll say. So I was off. I was seizure-free for maybe, honestly, I can't remember. It might have been a year I was seizure-free. So then they said it would be a good call to take me off of it. I had not had migraines until a few years ago, that I did have ultimately one of the craziest migraines, which I didn't know was a migraine. I thought I was having a stroke. Yeah. So I just recently was diagnosed with having migraines.
Okay.
And I believe that there's a correlation.
Totally.
I totally, and we've talked about it.
But is there a correlation between the seizure disorder and the migraines, or is there a correlation between the medication and the migraines?
That I don't know.
That's a good question. Because I'll tell you, it messed with my brain so much that people could tell me, you know, a series of numbers, because I was at a job where people would tell me a number and I would repeat it back. And you could tell me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I read it back and it was like 5, 7, 9, 3. And then they'd say, no, that's not it. it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I'd read it back and it wouldn't even be the same number again.
So crazy.
Very odd. And then I started losing vision in one of my eyes, which happens to be something I guess can happen with migraines. And with migraines, the ones that I've had, I've thrown up within a couple hours of that.
So it's almost like a version of a seizure.
Kind of, yeah, except I'm awake.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I do get those, the little, I want to say the static in my eyes. So I don't get those types of migraines too often, thankfully, but...
Do you track them at all to see, like, if there's a trigger?
No, because those type, I haven't had them that often to even form a pattern.
Right.
I mean, so that was the first one, and after that I did go to the doctor, and the doctor said I had an oral migraine. Because it was a headache, and then you get the little fuzzies that happen on the side, and yeah, it's not fun. And then your head starts pounding, and wants to break a hammer through your head.
It is interesting, though. So, like you say, like, it's not a seizure in the typical sense that we would say it's a seizure because you're awake, but we don't really know enough about seizures to say, like, maybe that is a form of a seizure.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. And the doctor I'd seen, I don't even know if he'd looked at my past medical history to make a correlation.
Great.
I hate that.
No.
Yeah.
Soapbox for that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Here you got access, but you're not doing the research behind it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it is a good point to bring up, though.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break from today's episode because we want to tell you a little bit more about why Sensory Thera Playbox is just so awesome.
So their July box included one of our favorite games. It's called Pancake Pileup, and it's a super fun matching game that works on a lot of different skills. But they also had some fun tactile fidgets, a stretchy bead-filled wristband, which is super cool, and more.
Not only do their products help children with self-regulation and sensory integration, like we already mentioned, but also with fine motor development, visual motor skills, and these items can be used for positive reward chart systems, and they're delivered directly to your door every month, so you don't even have to think about it.
And you guys, it's so fun getting boxes in the mail. So, like, a subscription box is the best thing ever. We mentioned earlier that they are giving our listeners a 25% discount when you sign up, and that discount will go towards your first box.
So what you're going to do is head to their website, sensorytheraplaybox.com, and use the code THESENSORYPROJECTSHOW in all caps and with no spaces.
We will link it in the show notes as well, but make sure you go check them out. And let's get back to the episode. Okay, so let's go back a little bit. So you were not diagnosed with epilepsy, is that correct?
Correct.
Did you get a diagnosis?
Literally only a seizure disorder.
And is that like an official diagnosis, or is that just something they say, like, oh, this is just what they have? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they can't pinpoint it to epilepsy. So the next kind of fallback, and I'm not a medical practitioner, I think the next fallback would probably be you potentially have a seizure disorder.
Potentially.
You're having seizures kind of on an, you know, interval basis. It's not epilepsy that's, you know, happening super regularly to track, but it's, you know, considered a disorder.
Mm-hmm. Did you think that you have to live with this forever, or did you think about, I know you kind of said you were just in the moment, but I mean, how do you feel like it impacted you?
The fact the doctor says, oh, you could grow out of it. Well, how long will that be? How many more seizures will I have? How old will it be? How, you know, how much longer will it last? Yeah, absolutely. I thought about it. But you go every day seizure free thinking, oh, I made it through another day. So yeah, it did cross. I think it worried again. As a kid, I don't think we're looking at the long-term outcome more so than parents. So mm-hmm. It probably was something, you know, mom and dad thought about more often. But to me, yeah, I didn't know how long it would go. I didn't know how old I'd be before I grew out of it. Could have been 10 years, could have been the rest of my life.
Let's talk a little bit about what mom and dad like explained to you and what they talked to you about with it. What do you remember?
So I don't remember a lot. You know, I know, yeah, because I don't remember having like huge serious conversations about it.
Me neither.
You know, I know it was something that I could potentially have a seizure. You know, I think we maybe talked about what to do if that happens. I don't know, Rachel, if they ever told you, you know, if you're around me and I'm having a seizure, what to do. But I don't remember having a lot of talk about it.
I don't remember that either. I think the biggest, like one of the biggest memories I have is mom took me with her to talk to your sixth grade teacher when it was all happening because you'd missed school. And she was crying and really upset, and I didn't totally understand why. I mean, I remember the first seizure that you had, and dad was, you'd walked upstairs and dad was like trying to get you to come to, and he was panicky. And so when he gets panicky, I was like, oh my gosh, something's wrong, but I don't know what it is. And I just kind of felt like no one knew. And that was hard for me, like the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the unknown is always the scariest thing. But I think also it kind of helps. I want to say it kind of helped not saying too much about it, because, you know, you just want to kind of go on with normal life. You don't want anything to affect you. So I think it kind of helped keeping it on the... I feel like it helped on the keeping on the down low.
Yeah, on the DL, especially at that age, like you don't want to be different.
Yeah, and what do you tell a sixth grader?
Yeah,
I mean it's tough to tell them. Well, you know, your brain is firing crazy every once in a while. I think it's a tough thing to talk to a small kiddo about. But you know, I was present with the doctor's appointments, and doctor says it was a seizure disorder and kind of described, you know, what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
But that was really the most knowledge that we had.
But I also look at that and think, like, did you have other kids around you talking about seizures, or other friends talking about seizures? Like, it's just not something that's talked about in everyday life. And so if it happens to a kid, that kid is like, well, I don't really know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at that age too, it's the kids being goofy, kids dropping on the ground, mm-hmm. and squirming around and
to make his friends laugh.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it was nothing. There was no conversations at all in school. None of my peers, we never talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing when you're, you know, if you are thrown up in class every day where they're seeing that, that's one thing. But for this to be happening, I think it's, you know, yeah, no one knows really how to have a conversation about it.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I grew up in a really small town. And I do remember in high school in art class, there was a kid that I was in school with, and I'd been going to school with him for years. And it just, this story reminds me of him because he didn't have epilepsy. He had never had any, you know, he was a typical kid. But all of a sudden in his teenage years, he started having seizures every once in a while. And I remember watching him have a seizure in art class once. And it was just something like, you know, we all helped him, or like, you know, there's a couple people who helped him. A couple of us just stood by the side because we were like, well, there's just too many people mm-hmm. helping. But it wasn't something that was like talked about, like, hey, this is what it is. This is why it's happening. Like, nobody talks about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And makes you feel, you know, I feel for him because it's like, you don't know what you'll be doing, when it's going to happen, you know. You're praying that you're not driving a car or doing something on, you know, that could really cause harm to you.
Yeah, it's traumatic, though, from an outsider's perspective. Like, I know it's traumatic for you having the seizure, but from someone watching them.
Well, and I think it's different because he's your family, right?
So anyone. I've seen kids have seizures.
So have I.
I hate it.
But I think you also have that past experience of a family member having a seizure. So you have a very different perspective on it than somebody who doesn't have it. Like me. Mm-hmm. I don't have a family member who has experienced this. I haven't gone through it and watched my parents crying while they're talking to the teacher.
I never thought of that.
It is going to be more traumatic for you because you have a family member.
So much is happening right now. All of these things we're realizing.
Right? And we're not taking away from anyone who ever has had a seizure. We're just talking about our perspective.
Absolutely.
Is very different.
Yeah. It's a really intense feeling that I get. And, you know, I work with kids who have seizure disorders, who have epilepsy, who we have to be trained on what to do. Mm-hmm. And it puts a freaking pit in my stomach.
And again, it's because you have experience with it from a family standpoint.
Thanks a lot, bro.
Yep. Yeah. You're welcome. Have fun.
And
speaking from this side, it's like, I don't even know what's going on. You know, and then you wake up and life is normal again.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you're a little dazed and confused, but, you know, in the moment, unless you absolutely fall and, you know, hit your head, or it's, you know, a trauma. Like, I was so lucky that I didn't have physical harm to that extent.
Absolutely.
But to the person in the moment, they aren't even aware of what's happening. So, absolutely, I agree. From the third person perspective, it's terrifying.
Well, I liked your analogy of, like, it's like waking up from anesthesia, you know, and I've gone through surgery a couple of times to understand what that feels like. And it is, it's like you're awake and you're talking to people, and then all of a sudden, you know, you wake up and you're in a different room and everything's different. And you're like, wait, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't until just recently when I was thinking about all this again, having this going through this again, that it dawned on me, because I have had surgeries where I've woken up from that, and that's the closest thing I could describe. I could describe it as, at the time, I couldn't tell you what it was like, but it's the closest comparison I can make now.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the biggest things, one of the reasons why we wanted to have you here and share your story is to help parents understand how to navigate this area if their child is going through seizures at the moment, or if they have, or if they don't know what to expect. I think, you know, being able to share your perspective of, you know, there's a possibility they might grow out of it, you know, and they might not be able to communicate with their child what their child is going through and feeling. So having you to kind of share what you were going through in the moment is really helpful and enlightening for a lot of families, and positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm glad to share. And I think it's important, and I don't know the best route to go about it, but, you know, having, I think family obviously is the number one biggest support getting through it. Making sure everybody knows what to do if there's a seizure happening, how to keep the person safe. And I think being optimistic is very helpful too. Keeping that in the back of your head that you know you could potentially grow out of them, because if the kid's young enough, there's a chance that it could be like my case where I do end up growing out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good positive around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing great. You're functioning. You're a functioning human being.
I'm a functioning human.
Well, and then
stamped it.
I was going to ask, did this impact your adult life at all?
Not that I could really pinpoint. I mean, unless it's my quirks or walking on my toes. The only other thing that I can notice that's happened recently is just the migraines.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the biggest factor. And then there's no way to tell if that's actually going back to the
connected
seizures or not, but that's been the biggest thing. And absolutely every day it does. At some point I'm like, well, I could have a seizure today.
Mm-hmm.
You never know if it's
going to
come back.
You think about that?
Oh yeah, that's in the back of my head still. I could be out driving or, you know, hiking on a mountain and have a seizure. Because, I mean, I don't know what caused it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it could potentially happen again.
So then how do you not live in fear of that?
you just look past it, I guess. Keep going on with your passions and can't let it slow you down. And if it happens, it happens. Take each day as a day forward. But I don't live in fear with it. You know, I trust that I've gotten over it.
Or trust that whatever happens, happens.
What is one piece of advice that you could give our listeners, whether they're parents, whether they are people who are living with seizure disorders now? What's your one piece of advice that you could share?
Well, again, family. Stick together as a family. I think having a drive and a motivation, for me at the time it was track. That was the one thing. I want to be able to run my next race. Got to be able to get to my next race. I think that was the one thing. If the kiddo, if it's an adult, you know, have something to drive you through to get through each day. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I made it to my final race and I got third place in the city. So it paid off.
Yeah, it didn't hold you back.
Yeah, you have to have something to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't live in fear of, is today going to be a seizure day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have one tomorrow. I think that will wind you up. And I assume the stress could even cause a bigger effect on it too. So
totally.
Having something to look forward to, I think definitely is the biggest thing. Support the kiddo with passions and ambitions and be there as a family for him.
Yeah.
Aww.
There you go. There's your advice, Rachel. It's what you need to be doing.
I'm here for you, bro.
Jeez.
Thanks, sis.
All right.
Do you have any questions for us?
Yeah. So you mentioned that you both have dealt with kiddos that have seizures.
Mm-hmm.
Have you both encountered this mm-hmm. firsthand?
Yeah. Witnessed them. Yeah.
Does that change your method of treatment at all, knowing that a kid, you know, that you'll be seeing potentially has a seizure disorder? Does that cause you to change your treatment plan, or do you care about, you know, here's the kiddo's, you know, sensory condition? Do you just carry on, or does that affect anything?
It depends.
Yeah, I'd say there's two different answers for that. The first one would be if we know that the child has a seizure disorder or epilepsy or something, we have to modify our approach to avoid like vestibular input.
But it also is dependent on the type of seizure disorder or type mm-hmm. of epilepsy, because there are so many different types, and there are some people who, you know, your example was the strobe light. There are some people whose seizures are triggered by bright flashing lights.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people whose seizures are triggered by loud noises mm-hmm. or by certain types of movement. So it is very dependent on the person, on the client.
Mm-hmm. But it makes it definitely more involved in our, and we don't work, the setting that we work in is, it's not as intense as like the ICU. The seizures are typically being managed.
Yes.
So
yes.
Knowing that, talking to the families, you know, we avoid these different sensory mediums. And then, you know, I've worked with patients in the past who, you know, we talk about a plan, they have meds with them.
Mm-hmm.
The families have actually written out like instructions, so we have them on file if the child has a seizure.
Nice.
And so it makes me nervous. I won't lie. It makes me nervous.
And I've worked with clients who are in the situation where there's the potential for them to have a seizure every day
mm-hmm.
or every week. And so we just have to be aware of that. I've worked with clients who are very aware, who know, who can tell me, and who can say, I'm about to have a seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also worked with clients who it's just very random and they've tried to track it, but kind of like your situation where there was no pattern that mm-hmm. they could see.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's kind
of
curious all
because that. If they can tell you that they're about to.
And there is, and I've heard of it. I've done a little bit of research on it before, that there's like, I don't know if it's the person or if it's the type of seizure or the area of the brain, but they can like feel it coming on, almost like you would describe like a migraine, like you can kind of start to see different things in your peripheral vision, or it gets fuzzy, or you can just feel that sensation and you're like, oh, this is what it feels like, I'm about to have a seizure.
That's a good point. Because I could almost tell that there would be something happening, but I wouldn't know for sure. It wasn't a consistent thing.
Mm-hmm.
That would definitely help.
Yeah,
beforehand.
Yeah, it changes it a little bit.
I think it's a good point to bring this up to people. So, I'm glad that you're making everybody aware. Keep on doing what you're doing. Help everybody out.
All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us and sharing your story. And
yes, because it's
it can
be hard to share these stories sometimes.
Yeah.
Nope, it's good. It's good because it let me look at it again from an adult perspective, and I think it was a great thing to share with the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we have families who maybe just want to connect with you, or
you're about to become famous, that's all we're saying.
What would be the best way for them to do that?
Email.
Okay.
They can certainly send me an email. That's certainly fine.
Okay. You know, might just be a good resource to have and someone to bounce ideas off of. I know you don't work in this profession, but you have experience and that's helpful.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is.
Glad to help.
So I have met Rachel's brother in the past, so I already knew him, but I've never had a conversation with him like this before, so this was really awesome.
Yeah, and I, like you guys heard in here, have some deep, dark trauma related to this.
Right.
That I never really worked through. I never had those feelings come up before.
Or like thought about it in that light.
Yeah.
Right? Because, yeah. For example, if I witness someone having a seizure, or I'm, you know, with someone who has a seizure, I am going to have a very different response than you will, mm-hmm. because of our past.
Yeah. So that was really eye-opening for me.
Super interesting.
I'm curious if anyone else has those same feelings. You know, yeah. Maybe if you're a parent who has a child with epilepsy or a seizure disorder, mm-hmm. if you can relate to how I feel.
Oh, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. There was a couple of things that we wanted to touch on really quick. We chatted with Brian off recording for a couple of minutes, and he did mention that he was wearing some blue lens. Was it blue yellow lens?
Yeah.
Blue yellow lens glasses that he got from Amazon, that he said when he's, you know, on a computer screen, he uses these glasses and it really helps with his vision and with his, you know, potential migraines. So we're going to link those in the show notes, but that's definitely a helpful tip. And then we also chatted about one other thing briefly.
Yeah, he totally called us out. I didn't know that he had listened to any of our podcasts.
I bet he listens to all of them.
Probably.
Now he will.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys have listened to our interview with Carol from Brain Harmony, but in that episode, we had talked about the Safe and Sound protocol. I had my brother use the protocol, and I was like, I don't think he finished it. And
he called you out and is like, I did finish that.
And he actually said the benefits were fabulous. So yeah. He noticed a big difference after using just the 5-day protocol with that.
Yeah. So we'll link that as well in the show notes just so you can check it out, because it is definitely just, you know, another avenue to explore if you're experiencing or know someone who's experiencing seizures or seizure disorder, epilepsy. You know, Brian was very open to people reaching out to him. So his email's in the show notes. And I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah. Leave us a review on iTunes. Give Brian a shout out. You know, he doesn't do social media, but
he's going to have to now.
I know.
He's famous now.
let us know your thoughts on this more conversational type episode. And we'd love to hear what you guys thought about it.
Yep. Thanks for being here.
We'll chat with you next week.
Bye. Okay, so before we let you go, a quick reminder to check out Sensory Thera Playbox. Use the code TheSensoryProjectShow to receive a 25% discount on your first box.
Yeah, you guys, instead of just buying random toys for your kids all the time, this box provides specific items that are curated by a pediatric occupational therapist. So it's not just junk to add to your living room. It's
it's products that are designed with a specific need in mind.
Yes, and they're delivered to your door each month. Super fun opening the box. They're perfect for so many different things. Skill development, using these items as rewards for sticker charts. You know, we like to use sticker reward charts for toilet training or trying new foods or getting dressed or primitive reflex integration. You know, all the things. And these are the perfect items to use as those rewards.
You guys, if you do sign up and take advantage of this awesome offer, then when you get your box, tag us on Instagram, tag them on Instagram at SensoryTheraPlayBox, and make sure that you're watching our Instagram stories, because we are going to give you some behind the scenes on this wonderful company and all the goodies that you can get. We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.